Committee will please come to order. Mr. Houston, would you be kind enough to take the silent roll? Thank you, Mr. Houston. Having a quorum, we're ready for business. Committee, we have on our agenda first the executive revenue projections presentation from Mr. Ferguson. Welcome, Mr. Ferguson, to the committee, and the floor is yours.
I am the chief economist. Together we produce the economic and revenue forecasts that you have before you. You have a handout. There are really two documents that have been supplied. One is labeled handout, the other is labeled spreadsheet, which is available electronically. It is more detailed behind several of the sheets that are in the handout, and I'll explain that momentarily. I'm going to go through this rather quickly to simply apprise you of what is in this. There's a lot of information, and it's obviously not something that can be handled in depth in 10 minutes, actually 5 minutes. On your handout, the first sheet, page one, is the recent history and forecast of general fund revenue out to FY 2017. The reason the forecast goes out to 2017 is because we do our economic forecast out that far, and given the economic circumstances, it's necessary to look out quite a ways to see what is happening in terms of the revenue stream, its behavior in relationship to the economic downturn, and when we might expect to see revenues return to something more approaching normal. That will become clear in a moment. Revenue forecast is at the bottom of the enclosed table. You can see for FY10, minus 4.7%, $2,349,000,000, 3.6% growth in 2011, 8.8% growth in 2012, and then it continues on. Now, this is actual revenue history and forecast. This isn't the basis that we use for making the revenue forecast, and that's why I've included these additional sheets. The history, and it goes back to FY70, and that's available in the supplemental spreadsheet that you have, is normalized. If you flip the page, what you'll see is a sheet labeled normalized history and forecast. We normalize the history in order to remove the effect of tax rate changes, distribution changes, things of that nature. We do not take out economic fluctuations. What we want to do is leave only the economic fluctuations so that we can then use that to do the econometric forecasting in order to produce the numbers in the forecast period. Those normalized forecast values are then converted back into actual by undoing the normalization process. And in the case of this forecast, what we've had to do is factor in the effect of the grocery credit change, which is staggered and comes in a phase in over time. That's not reflected in the normalized numbers, but it's in the actual history in 2009 and in the forecast for 10 and beyond. We also factor in a prior law change relating to bonus depreciation, and some things relating to cigarette tax and the inheritance tax. If you flip the page again, you'll see a sheet labeled normalized trend. The top three lines or groups are individual, corporate, and sales. The trending has been done at the level of those components as well as for the total general fund revenue, but the number that's pertinent is the total general fund revenue. And what that represents is the long-term relationship between personal income and the Idaho's general fund revenue. It's essentially a smooth historical series that takes out the fluctuations, the noise, if you will, that come about because of economic booms and busts. So the fitted trend historically looks at that long-term relationship and says year by year, what would we have had if that relationship had held year in, year out, which it clearly doesn't. It is then forecast using the forecast of personal income. Now I would draw your attention to the left side below the box area. Idaho personal income fiscal year basis, two-year moving average. For this purpose, for the trend purpose, we've used the two-year moving average of income to smooth out some of the volatility in income. So it's basically to produce a trend. If you flip the page again, we're at the normalized cycle history and forecast. This is simply the difference between the normalized values and the normalized trend values. When these numbers are positive, it means that revenue exceeded the trend amount by the amount shown. When the values are negative, revenues fell below the trend amount by the amount shown. The relevant thing here is, if you look at the last several years, you can see that FY 2006 was up by 181 million, 2007 by 261, 2008 was starting to see the effect of the downturn, but was still ahead by 123 million, and then 2009 saw a massive drop below the trend to about 312 million. This is on a normalized basis. Over the forecast interval, the gap between the trend value and the normalized forecast is 418 million this year, FY10, 364 million in 11, 242 in 12. Bottom line is, we don't get back to the trend according to this forecast, and that's what it is, a forecast, until FY2015. So there's a fairly long period that we're in this slump that's due to the economic downturn. Flip the page again. This is handout page 5. This is Idaho General Fund revenue expressed as a share of personal income. Personal income for the state is our broadest metric in terms of what determines the tax base for the state of Idaho. Personal income is what we've used for trending purposes. This shows year by year what that relationship has been over time. Now, you'll see that in the 70s, the percents were quite a bit lower. That's because the sales tax rate was quite a bit lower. So if you flip the page again, what you have is the normalized values. Income doesn't change, but the normalized revenue values do. All of the history has been converted to the current sales tax rate of 6%, and that's what brings up the normalized revenue and the normalized share of total personal income. And that's what we base our forecasting process on. And you can see there's basically a general downward drift in the general fund as a share of personal income. Flip the page again, page 7. This simply shows in much simpler terms graphically the, again, this is normalized values, so it has the effect of law changes removed. Well, I should say law changes related to the rate or the distribution formula. The red line are the actual historical numbers, but normalized. The dashed portion is the forecast. The green line is the trended values, the fitted trend. And you can see what happened in 2000, 2001, when actuals went above the trend. That was the boom that then led to the crash that we experienced in 2002 and 2003. We were down 3 years, according to this analysis, below the trend. You can see the boom that occurred in the period of 2006, 7, and 8, which corresponds to the real estate bubble that subsequently burst, and then what happened in 2009 in the subsequent forecast. Flip the page again, and you can see this exact same information. Now it's the difference. So the center of this chart is 0. Anything above the center is positive, meaning that we had boom conditions and positive revenue above the trend. Anything below the zero line is the amount by which we're down. This simply puts it in the cycle or one-time concept terms. Flip it again. Now I've provided you with the same information as the last two charts, but in actual terms. So I've basically reversed out the normalization. So these lines are the actual history and the trend applied to the actual history. Finally, flip again, page 10. This is that cycle data. Now it's converted back to actual. This is relative to what we really think is going to come through the door. And you can see that in 2009, we were down on this basis by $307 million. For 10, our estimate is $413 million. For 11, it's $358 million. And we don't get back to the trend until 2015. Well, almost by 2014. Flip the chart again. I know you're interested in what's been happening in the revenue stream lately. This is our most current monitoring spreadsheet. This shows the revised forecast, the January 2010 forecast, the column in the center of the page, and the December revenues that are based on that forecast and the actuals that came in. You can see the bottom line is $12.6 million below expectations. That consists primarily of 11.5 short on individual income tax, $6.8 million short on corporate income tax. Miscellaneous was ahead by 5.9. Now, the bad news in this that makes it a top line negative $12.5 million is that on the individual income tax, we had $8 million less in filing payments than were expected for the month and $4 million more in filing refunds than were expected. So it's the filing side, and given that this happened in December, it's backward looking. We're not yet in this sheet. We're not yet on this sheet into the filing season for the current tax year. There is embedded in this some actual good news. And the good news is that unlike recent past months, both sales tax and withholding collections have either come in essentially on target or ahead of target. Sales tax, if you look at the sheet, has been seeing ever-increasing declines below the estimated amount. 400,000 in August, 1.6 million in September, up to 3.8 million in November. In January, with a slightly revised downward forecast, we came in 100,000 below, which is essentially on target for the month of December. In withholding, which is not shown specifically on the sheet, we were actually 800,000 ahead of expectation. If you flip the sheet, what you have here is a chart that shows two items, normalized sales tax in gross terms and actual withholding year-over-year percent changes. What you can see is that in the early part of the decade, withholding collections dropped pretty precipitously in that downturn, came back. They're pretty noisy. They're the brown-colored line. You can see the fairly deep drop that occurred over the past several months, but again, it's fairly noisy, but we've been seeing double-digit declines. That basically moderated in December to a 3.6% decline. In the sales tax, we also have been seeing double-digit declines, and again, in December, that moderated to a 3.5% decline. So what we've seen is in December, both sales tax and withholding, which are the contemporaneous indicators within the revenue stream, actually improved and fairly dramatically. So essentially that's the information that I intended to hand you. I took a little, about 2 minutes more than I was allotted. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to entertain those, or Mr. Santos, depending on the question.
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson. Thank you, Mr. Santos. Committee, we're open for questions for Mr. Ferguson or Santos. Representative Killen.
Mr. Ferguson, on the sales tax, the figures you show here are actual to revised forecast, I'm assuming. Do you have similar figures year to year, actual to actual?
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Killen, the last chart, which has the 3.5% decline, that is actual year ago to actual December. And that's what's slowed down from the double-digit declines that had been occurring.
Further questions? Senator LaFavor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mike, on the handout page 2, and some of these items, are you at all correcting for population growth, or are you counting that in there? It kind of looks like you're counting it in there. So.
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, no, we are not adjusting this for population growth, which would be part of the economic side. We don't want to take that out of the numbers.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up?
Yeah. Just to be clear, while that does produce more revenue for the state and make it look like positive economics for us, it does also create additional costs because we have more individuals to serve. So I guess for state revenue forecasting, it is an important number. I would just say that.
Thank you, Senator. I beg the committee's pardon. Representative Killen, have a follow-up. We'll go ahead and go back to him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ferguson, I'm looking at the last page 12, and it seems, it says on the one I've got, it's normalized sales tax year to year. Is that not different from actual?
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, the comparison of December of 2008 to December of 2009 is identical for normalized or for actual because there is no change in the rate. However, for some of the earlier years in this, in the middle section of this chart, this is normalized. So the numbers would be misleading because of the fact that we went from 5 to 6, back to 5, and then back to 6. And that distorts the year-over-year comparison. So that's the reason that we normalize. That's one of the reasons that we normalize.
Thank you.
Representative Bedke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike, I'm on your chart 7 or 9. Is there something about the model that as time goes by, I mean, as you look retrospective there back to 1970, the lines come together. Is that a self-correcting thing? So as time passes, the differential between the two lines becomes more of the norm, and so therefore as time passes, then they come together, or were the predictions back then better? Yeah, that's unfair. But I mean, what makes the line come together in the way this is lays out?
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bedke, part of it is a function of the linear scale of the vertical axis of the chart. Those are smaller numbers to begin with, and so the same relative magnitude of change is going to look much smaller at the lower end of the scale than it is at the upper end. But I would say that the chart does indicate that in the past two recessions, we have seen much greater volatility in the revenue stream, and that is what's evident in the tail end of the chart, in the historical portion of it. What economists have talked about for for about the last decade is the Great Moderation, a very dramatic stabilizing in economic fluctuations in terms of the real economy. But what we saw in 2002 was a very dramatic financial collapse for not just Idaho, but for virtually all states. And so there has been this coincident fluctuation that's occurred in the revenue stream. That is a relatively recent development. I mean, the economic downturn in 2001 was the mildest in a century, and yet we had some of the wildest financial swings in state governments since the Depression. And at the time, it seemed like that was probably a 1-in-1,000-year event, but apparently it was a dress rehearsal for what we're going through now. But there, the fluctuations, relatively speaking, would be larger back in the earlier portions of the chart. I could do this in logarithmic terms, if you'd like, supply you with that, and that would show you those relative changes over the entire time frame, if you'd like.
Well, I don't think that's necessary.
Okay.
But my point is this. Okay, so we have all that this time of moderation, and then we see the downswing that was unexpected after 9/11 2001,
right.
and then we see the ride up above what was expected, through the what we called here the real estate bubble,
mm-hmm.
And does that burst? Now we're seeing, I guess the point is that we characterize this as uncharted territory, yet you seem, you know, with all due respect, to pick the bottom there and then start showing the upswing. If we are indeed in uncharted territory, and this fluctuation, or at least the difference between the expected and the actual, or the expected and the prediction is unprecedented all the way along there. The old models, the old practices. Anyway, I you know, picking a bottom is as you have here seems to be maybe presumptuous. May I say that? Would you care to comment?
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Becky, it is a forecast, and as such, the only thing we know for certain about it is it will be wrong. But having said that,
Mr. Chairman, that was my point.
Having said that, the forecast is a median forecast, meaning that there is an equal probability, in my mind at least, that it will be, that the actual result will be above that number versus below that number. In other words, this takes all of the possibilities for the future and rolls them into single point observations year by year and says, what's the most likely outcome? And I would point out that, I mean, we have been seeing in recent months positive developments in terms of Idaho data, and even at the national level there have been some positive developments. For example, the national forecast that we use for this revenue forecast, which is the red line, that forecast done in early December had 2010 real GDP growth for the nation at 2.2%. The January forecast that came out from Global Insight, which isn't reflected here, was revised upward to 2.5%. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but in the world of macroeconomic forecasting, that's a pretty large change from one month to the next to go from 2.2 to 2.5%. So nationally, things are looking better. When we're at the bottom of a recession, which is presumably where we're at, the signals will be mixed. It will be very difficult to get clear readings on whether we're going up or down. But I would say right now the preponderance of evidence suggests that we have in fact stabilized. 3-4 months ago, it felt like we were in a free fall. It was pretty disheartening, and yet I was having to do forecasts that saw a bottom and projected a climb out. Now, there is admittedly a lot of debate about whether some of the declines that have happened. If you remember in my presentation the first week of, well, the week before the session began, I showed you retail sales. They dropped about 10%, unprecedented in modern times in at least half a century. Is that a new set point, or will we gradually come back to something more closely resembling a trend value? Clearly, the last several years are not going to be attained because that was done through borrowing and some irrational exuberance. But the level we've dropped to is also substantially below what one would expect given the size of the economy, the number of consumers, and the resources and technology and so forth that we have. It's open question as to whether we get back to that. The economic forecast that we are basing this all on that you have in front of you presumes a pretty slow slog out of this downturn. It's not a barn burner. It's not your typical V-shaped recovery. It's more of a U. It's not an L. It's not a W. We do have an alternative simulation that has a W, which would mean a drop back into downturn, because that is a possibility. But there's also a more optimistic possibility. We've taken the middle path on this and come up with what we believe to be a responsible median forecast.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. All right, so as we translate all this national data, I apologize, I don't remember the reference that you used there to the national data points that show, you know, mixed signals, which translates into possibly the bottom. Can we translate that into Idaho's economy, and are there areas where we can point to specifically in Idaho activity that give us reason for optimism?
Mr. Ferguson, Mr. Chairman, Representative Betsy, probably one of the most optimistic things specific to Idaho that I've heard is that Micron has flipped in one quarter from
about a $100 million loss to a $200 million profit. Over year over year, it was nearly a $1 billion flip in comparing the same quarter year earlier. They've also made some announcements recently about some partnerships that they're entering into relating to solar cell production. We have some businesses that are engaged in renewable energy that have had some problems due to the financial situation middle of 2009. Those appear to be resolved, and we're seeing wind turbines produced. We're seeing polysilicon manufacturing moving forward. So, I mean, there are some positive developments that suggest that we have seen the big sources of decline arrested.
Committee, any further questions? For the first time, I'll go through.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ferguson, I want to go back to a statement you made concerning the numbers that we just received in December activity, focusing on the individual income tax withholding refunds. You made a comment that you were surprised to see the amount of refunds that came in the December number. First of all, explain to me how people can get a refund in December, and then comment further on that, if you would, please.
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roberts, in terms of the individual income tax, one sees filing payments come in all months of the year, but about 60% of filing comes in April, and about 25% comes in December and January combined, and the rest trickles in the remaining months, and it's typically down in the 1 or 1.5% range in the other 9 months of the year. So the reason that we see filing payments being made late in the year would be amending prior year returns typically, and we've seen a couple of episodes of that. In fact, if you look at the page 11 here, you can see in August there was a monthly excess of $12 million. About half of that was due to amended returns. People had underpaid previously, were amending their returns and paying more. Now, as to refunds, that's a similar situation where a taxpayer can make an amended return and then the tax commission would issue a refund if that's what the return calls for. So the point I was trying to make is that either receipts in December or payouts via refunds in December are backward looking. They're not going to be for the 2009 tax year. That doesn't start until this month when we start to see refund claims come in, and then we'll see payments made in April. The reason we're so highly concentrated in April is because we're one of only two states that doesn't have estimated payments for individuals. And I haven't checked this lately, but Utah was the other state that didn't have estimated payments. So that tends to concentrate business and investment income into that lump payment that comes in when the tax return is due.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Mr. Ferguson, on the next page, on page 12, the blue line talks about the normalized sales tax, but the actual withholding is reflected in the brown line. In calendar year 8, which is the year of the data that's next to the end, mm-hmm. Much of that year-over-year change is above zero. In other words, we still had some growth reported in 2008 revenues. I mean, that's based on we're operating on a post-activity basis when it comes to individual income tax, because the people will pay their taxes or get refunds in January and April of this year based on economic activity in calendar year 9. And so when I look at that and I see the number of months that were actually above the zero line, and then I look at the 09 year and I cannot find any point above the zero line, I guess my concern is, what will that tell us about individual income filing taxes in Idaho in January? And is that, are we leading into more people getting refunds in January based on this data, based on withholding, and in April? And I know it doesn't account for S-Corps that report to individuals, because that is really not measured unless this committee as a whole, we talk to our friends and that file S-Corp papers, say we had a good year, a mediocre year, or a bad year. I mean, that's what this committee's for. But if you could talk in relation to withholding and wages as those 2 years compare, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roberts. Within the income tax, it's correct that for business and investment income, the entire year of 2009 is rolled into the payments that are made in April of 2010. For withholding, however, the situation is a little bit different. Withholding is a pay-as-you-go basis, so it's basically reflecting what's going on in the economy on a month-by-month basis. However, as you can see here, it is subject to noise. Some of these bounces would be due to the disbursement of bonuses, for example. Taxpayers generally like to calibrate their withholding so that they don't end up having to pay large amounts or don't get excessively large refunds. So taxpayers try to moderate their withholding through various mechanisms to keep it at a level that they're comfortable with. So as withholding is concerned, what you see is what you get. I mean, it does reflect what's happening in real time, or as close to real time as you can get. Now, to the extent that there is overwithholding, that can lead to refunds. But I don't know that it's really possible to look at the raw withholding data and make a judgment as to whether there's overwithholding or not, whether people have been too conservative in terms of the amount that they've had withheld and thereby have a systemic increase in refunds that was unanticipated. One of the other things that I know is of great concern is the economic downturn, which began for Idaho actually back in August of 2007. For the nation, according to the metrics from the National Bureau of Economic Research, in December of 2007, which you can see here was clearly underway in 2008, and then got a real head of steam when we had the financial disaster in September, October of 2008. One of the things I would point out is that in 2009, we saw bottoming of the equities market in markets in March, and we've since seen a considerable amount of recovery there. So that could mitigate some of the pessimism, if you will, that would relate to this particular event in the equities market versus what happened in the beginning of the decade. This basically is a pattern of activity that's a little bit different than what happened in the big equity blow up in the beginning of 2000 and 2001.
Thank you. Committee, any further questions for the first time? Seeing none, Senator LaFavre for the second.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mike, you know, when you were asked whether, you know, the indicators you've used, what indicator you're using to determine the bottom, and you talked about Micron, I guess I would want to focus a little bit more on consumer spending end of things, since that is a good two-thirds of it all. And I guess in that sense, it seems that sales tax collections might not be the best indicator to some extent, and that really there's a lot of unpredictability because consumer spending has a lot to do with confidence. And the Micron thing could lead people's confidence, most certainly. And national conditions could lead people's confidences really nicely. But aren't we probably more looking at sales tax trends in that sense? And isn't that kind of the case.
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator LaFever, if we don't have, other than the sales tax information, we don't have retail sales data for the state of Idaho, so we don't have an actual economic series. But if we look at national data, the big collapse that occurred in the retail sales data occurred at the end of 2008. And over the course of 2009, there's been a gradual increase that's occurred. Now, when you're looking at year-over-year numbers such as this, those year-over-year numbers are going to be negative, even though the month-to-month, if you had seasonally adjusted month-to-month, would be showing a positive trend, never so slight, perhaps. But I'm glad you brought that up, because that is yet another reason to think that we may well have seen the bottom. Now the discussion will turn to what's the path out. Will it be the U, will it be the V, will it be the W, whatever. And what I'm saying is we don't expect the kind of robust recovery that you typically have after a recession. We're expecting a relatively long, hard slog out of this, but it is growth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ferguson. Thank you, Mr. Santos, for being here and for your presentation. Summary, we appreciate your time.
Beg your pardon.
If we could keep, well, pardon me, gentlemen. Representative Killen is, we're really behind schedule. If we could,
I'll could make it speak to Mr. Ferguson.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Thank you. I tried to keep this in the first and second form. Thank you very much, committee. We now have a projections review by Mr. Houston. Mr. Houston, if you are prepared, as soon as you're prepared, the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you should have two handouts. Okay, I've got two handouts for you, Mr. Chairman. One's a blue one, and this gets back to Representative Killen's question. Actual collections for the first 6 months of this year versus the last 6 months of last year. And you can see there the top 6 months, we brought in $1,143.6 million cumulatively. Last year's actual collections through December were $1,269.8 billion, so we're down 9.9% cumulatively from last year. So that, and that shows you by individual income tax, corporate, sales tax, product taxes, and miscellaneous revenue. Okay, then the next thing I wanted to do then is go through the packet. This is your committee report in draft form. The first page you'll see there says draft one. And what I've done is I've taken the, well, perhaps maybe what we should do, let's go back to the data first. So I've taken the data and incorporated it into those first few pages. So Kathy, if you'd scroll through to about the fourth page there, you'll be able to see the committee data. It's attachment two. One more, Kathy. Attachment two. The 2010 estimate, the most pessimistic member of your committee is Representative Roberts with $2,280 million, $2,280,000, which is a 7.5% decrease from last year. And then the universities are your high one at $2,450.1 or millions, pardon me, thousands of millions. The committee median here is $2,331.9 million. There we go. Let's try billions. And the governor's forecast is $2,349.1 million. So the committee median of 5.4% below last year is $17.3 million, or 0.7% below last year's, or below the governor's recommendation, below the governor's forecast. In 2011, the committee median is $2,388.6 million, or 2.4% above the median from 2010. And then the governor's forecast is 3.6% over the 4.7% reduction, which is $2,432.9 million. And then the committee's median is $44.4 million, or 1.8% below the governor's forecast. The range of participants you'll see in 2010 was $170.1 million, and the 2011 estimate there, $375.8 million. And then in the 2012 estimate, you see the range is much wider, $643.7 million, and you're 181, or about 7% below the governor's forecast. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think perhaps then we'll move back to the first couple of pages where I put together a draft. This is the traditional format that you do for this report. Starts out with FY10. Well, we have completed making our overall assessment of Governor Otter's general fund revenue projections for fiscal years ended June 30th, 2010, 11, and 12. Idaho's Constitution requires the balancing of appropriations and expenditures. The committee reviewed and analyzed business, tax, and financial data and trends relating to the state's economy and obtained testimony from economic businesses and industry experts. And then it goes into the paragraph here, Governor Otter's general fund revenue projections for FY 2010, 11, and 12 compared to the committee's median projections are as follows. And in the table here then for 2010, those figures that I have showed you on the other table, Governor Otter's projections on the first line, the committee's median projections on the second, and then the amount over or under that projection. Then the attachments, which detail the committee's each member's projections for each of those 3 years, both graphically and in tabular form. And then attachment three, then you'll see, is a historical comparison for how each of those groups of participants has done over the last 10 years. And then the real meat of the subject then, Kathy, if you'd roll down just a bit on your screen there. We recommend to the Senate and House leadership and to the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee the following. In our opinion, Governor Otter's general fund revenue projections of $2.3491 billion, that projection is reasonable for the purpose of the legislature making general fund appropriations for 2010. However, because the committee's forecasts for 2011 and 12 are significantly lower than the governor's projections, we recommend the legislature use the committee median of $2.3886 billion for the purpose of making general fund appropriations for FY 2011. So under this scenario, this would be very much what you did last year, where you were fairly close on the first year, went with the governor's recommendation originally, and then the following year you made it an adjustment to that recommendation. The draft two on the next page is another option, very similar to that, except that in the last part of the sentence there, however, because the committee's forecasts for 2011 and 12 are significantly lower, we recommend the legislature use the governor's approach of removing $83.8 million from the revenue estimate for the purpose of making general fund appropriations. So those are a couple of options, and then I can work from the screen over here if you have other choices, if you have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Houston. Committee, any questions for Mr. Houston? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Houston. Committee, we have the material before us, and at this point, we're open to entertain any motions. Considering the seating arrangement, you'll have to speak up.
Mr. Chairman.
Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I just have a comment that, and a reminder, and I'm sure this is hedging on the obvious, but all of our projections were based on numbers and perceptions that we received prior to having available to us the December revenues, which we knew were $12.9 million less. So just to point that out for everyone's concurrence.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Getty.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Houston had done some further analysis of that $2.6 million, and I'm wondering if we might prevail on him to tell us about that.
Mr. Houston, 12.6, I believe. Mr. Houston, to whatever extent you would care to address that.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that perhaps the blue report would be the best place to look at that. If you went into the third page of that blue report, this shows the $12.6 million shortfall in December, and then what you would have to have for the rest of the year to get out of that. To make that 12.6 back. Is that what you're referring to, Senator Getty? The actual shortfalls are on page one by each of the sources, and then page three shows us if we're 12.6 million behind, you basically, if you were to fill out the rest of the year and meet all of the numbers that you did last year, if you were to, for the remaining months, January through June, if you were to collect the same amount of money you got last year, you'd still be in at 5.1% below last year. So the forecast that Mike put before you is better than the next 6 months of collections.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Senator Getty, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Houston. My memory was that you'd done some looking at the revenue in December and had some comments on specific types of revenue. And maybe I'm not remembering things correctly.
Mr. Chairman and
Houston.
Senator Getty, I'm not on the same page with you there. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Killen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the comment that we just heard, I would just simply note that the packet of material that I received in the week prior to the session beginning included, among other things, the Tax Commission's memorandum, which showed, among other things, comparative statements that for 2000 or FY09 and FY10, and did in fact include data for revenues, general fund revenues, through December 31st of 09. I think it was the only sheet that was provided that did that, and I know a number of the members had left early, so perhaps they weren't aware of that. I made an effort to include those December numbers in the forecast I made.
Thank you, Representative Killen. Representative Lake.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to get the springboard for discussion, because I don't have a real firm opinion about it, but being one of those who made a reasonably high projection for 2010, I'll move that we recommend draft one that's been provided to us.
And do I see a second? Second from Representative Saylor.
Madam, Mr. Chairman. I didn't hear the motion.
We will now address the motion. Yes. Representative Lake, would you please restate the motion, and hopefully we can have it depicted on the screen as well, and you can confirm that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the motion was, and I apologize for the voice, but that we accept the recommendation of draft one that's been provided us, which is on the screen before you, as being the recommendation of this committee.
And that was seconded by Representative Saylor. Any further discussion? Any further motions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fulcher.
Mr. Chairman, it's with some trepidation that I offer an amended or a substitute motion. And the struggle I'm having is trying to walk that fine line of putting forth a recommendation that reflects the reality that the recent revenue numbers show, but also recognizing that there is such a thing as a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's where the trepidation comes from. But ultimately, I see the function of this committee and the recommendation we make to be one that that needs to exhibit some prudence when we're handling the people's money. And so I've got a little bit more conservative number that I'm going to recommend. So with all that rambling, Mr. Chairman, I recommend the Senate House leadership to the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee the following. And in our opinion, a general fund revenue projection of $2.28 billion is reasonable for the purpose of the legislature making general fund appropriations for 2010. Also, because the committee forecasts for fiscal year 2011-2012 are significantly lower than the governor's projections, we recommend the legislature use a revenue projection of $2.3 billion for the purpose of making general fund appropriations for fiscal year 2011.
And for the committee's benefit, if we will wait until we have that depicted on the screen, and if the maker of the motion can confirm that.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And do we have a second? It'll be seconded by Senator Guess. Further discussion on the motion. Senator Fulcher.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just add that I hope that that's wrong. But I can see the numbers. I can see what happened with December in recent months. And I just don't want to fall prey to having to come back and do this again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Fulcher. Any further discussion, committee? Senator Hill.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have a question for Mr. Houston, if I may. I just want to make sure I understand this between your draft one and draft two. Your draft two is more conservative than draft one. Draft one reduces the fiscal year 2011 amount $44.4 million, while draft two directs the or recommends that we remove $83.8 million based on what the way the government did it to bring it down to zero growth. So draft two is more conservative than draft one. Is that correct,
Mr. Houston?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hill, that is correct.
Senator Hill.
Based on that, Mr. Mayor, which is the way I understood it, I still have some real reservations about 2010. I really do. I think the committee got a little tired of me keep bringing up the personal income tax thing during our other meetings, but December proved that to be the case, as those prepayments, which self-employed individuals often make in December because they want a tax deduction, a federal income tax deduction for those state taxes they pay, they were down. I think that's just an indication of how far we're going to be down in April of 2010, when we generally get those funds, you know, that come in from those self-employed individuals who don't pay estimated tax payments, who don't have withholding. And looking at the projections as far as the forecast, I don't think we've made enough allowance for that, considering the very low decrease in April that we're showing for personal income taxes. So I'm still very concerned, but I guess I can go along with 2010 on a hope and a prayer. That's not a very logical way to cast a vote. But certainly 2011, I think we've got to be more conservative than just dropping it down to the median. Because we're basing it on that growth on 2010, which may already be over optimistic. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that that the committee adopt draft 2 that has been prepared by Mr. Houston to present to the leadership, the governor, and the legislature in JFAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hill. We have an amended substitute motion to adopt draft 2 as presented in your packet. Do we have a second? Seconded by Senator Getty. The committee is open for discussion on the amended substitute motion.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Representative.
Just to clarify, so that would put us at the governor's number, 2349 for 10, and whatever that number is, less the 83.8, is that correct?
Mr. Houston?
Which would be 2265?
Mr. Chairman, I think what it does is it brings us back down to the 2349 for both years.
I don't think that I could stand to be corrected, Mr. Chairman Ray, but I that's not what I think.
The committee, I would ask Mr. Houston to walk us through the language as presented in draft 2 to clarify.
Mr. Chairman, then, for draft 2, the governor's projection of 2349.1 would be the committee's recommendation, and then for 2011, it would be the same. It would be 2349.1. That would be the $83.8 million difference. So that's the flat revenue projection that's the flat budget that the governor has proposed.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, I would like to speak against the amended substitute motion. The 2349 number was an old number when it was presented in the State of the State, et cetera. We know that it's at least that if we hit the rest of the months from now on, that 2349 has got to go down by 12.6 million or to 2331. That was the committee's, that was the median or the average of the committee at that point. As the pro tem pointed out, that those December numbers may, or as Representative Killen pointed out, may or may not be factored into the committee's average. And but one thing we do know is that the 2349, and given the optimism that is expressed in the balance of the year, January through June, I'm wishing there was an ability to do an amended, but I guess there might be, depending on how the votes turn out. But we do not have the luxury this year of missing it like we did last year. We don't have the reserves that we can pull forward. As we start thinking about doing the budgets, we are building the 11 budgets around what reserves we do have left. And if we are wrong, then those reserves come forward to fill the 10 hole, and on the first day of the fiscal year of 2011, you're in a holdback situation, and I don't think that's, and I think we need more cushion built into this recommendation because of the no safety net nature of our situation this year as compared to last year.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak of the three motions that are on the table. I will speak in favor of the substitute motion at this point in time. We'll see if that's what we come out with. I want to follow up a little bit on what Representative Bedke was saying. And the committee, on the blue pages on page one, if we take the 9.9% that we're under on a cumulative percent for fiscal year 2010, and multiply that by the number of $2,465,000,000, which is the number of actual collections in '09, and that's what we're behind. If that continues, if that trend continues, we'll be at $2,221,000,000. So that's kind of a bookend for you to think about. Now, hopefully things will get better. Hopefully we'll be moving you know, closer to some of the trend lines if we've heard from Mr. Ferguson. But I think we have a difficult time getting out of 2010. I'm certainly willing to give the substitute motion a try and see if we can get out the door. But again, these I think a lot of these numbers are going to potentially change when we see what the actual January numbers look like. And as we get more and more months behind us, then we can make a better prediction as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year. I would support the substitute motion.
Thank you, Representative Roberts. Committee, any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Getty.
Mr. Chairman, I would speak in support of the amended substitute motion. As I reminded the committee at a prior meeting, our task is a daunting one. Any underestimating of revenue is going to mean we're going to cut programs in education and in health and welfare. And we'll have money in the bank maybe at the end of the year, but that's not going to help the people that we've denied services. So we've got to find a realistic number, and I'm very hopeful that that is the numbers that are represented in the amended substitute motion. Thank you.
Senator Bilyeu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted the someone to repeat for me the figures for draft 1, 2, and 3, or the original, the substitute, and the amended, please.
Thank you, Senator. Committee, any further discussion? Senator Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along with Representative Lake, I was one of the more optimistic. Part of the reason that I tended to be more optimistic was I was placing more of my optimism upon the testimony provided by the business and industry side of testimony that we received. And one of the concerns that I want to express that Senator Fulcher alluded to is and I'm not sure really which motion I'm speaking to here, but I think that it's important that we don't underestimate to the degree where we discourage our businesses in the state from taking that chance and investing in that new piece of equipment or buying that new building, because we don't think that it'll be a wise investment because we've projected so long. So I think that that's part of the balance that we have to strike. It's not just a matter of balancing our budget, which is very important. And I certainly agree with the concern expressed here that we don't want to come back and be having to do holdbacks the minute we come, or whoever is here, has to do holdbacks as soon as they come back for the next session. I appreciate that, and that's a valid concern. But I want to weigh in on the other side, too, and say we don't want to so underestimate that we discourage investment in our state as well.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Killen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would appreciate it if somebody, the staff perhaps, could actually put the three numbers up for each of the alternative motions before we vote, because I'm confused as to exactly where for FY 11.
Representative Killen, I think we can accommodate that. At least in print, we have two of them before us in hard copy and one on the screen. And Ray, if you'd walk us through that sequentially for the committee's benefit.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Killen, again, draft one, the original motion, is for the governor's 2010 number of $2,349.1 million, saying that that's reasonable. And then for 2011, using a number that is $44.8 million less than that, which is $2,388.6 million. I don't have that on a spreadsheet. I suppose if we could take a short break, I could put that on a spreadsheet for you. But then in the substitute motion, which is
very Mr. Hard. Chairman, just for clarification, if I may, it's more for that. Mr. Houston, I think you said the 2011 was less than the 2010. I don't think that's what you meant to say. It's the 44 million less than the governor's projection, but it is not 44 million less than the 2010. It's actually more than 2010.
Mr. Houston.
Thank you, Senator Hill. It's 44.4 million less than the governor's projection, which is the committee median. Pardon me. Then for draft two, you're looking at the for fiscal year 2010, accepting the governor's recommendation for 2010, but for 2011, using a number that's $83.8 million lower, which is my notes here, 2349.1, which is the same as 2010. And then, of course, the draft three on the screen up there is $2.28 billion for 2010, and then $2.3 billion for 2011.
Mr. Houston, if I could interrupt for just a moment. Committee, for perfect clarity on this, considering the dialogue that's taken place, I'd like to take just a 10-minute recess to get together with Mr. Houston to accommodate the committee and be able to lay these out such that it's perfectly clear for every member before we vote. So with that, we'll stand recess for 10 minutes.